This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we're talking about Gladiator 2.
Electric Boogaloo. This just feels like a Smosh skit, doesn't it? We got a sequel many, many years later and it just feels very odd. It's just like, why did this come to fruition? Ridley Scott just put it away. It was a beautiful ending to the movie. I was so satisfied watching that movie the first time this year. Amazing. I absolutely love it. And then hearing about it was one of the most shocking things ever. I was like, is this real? Are we stuck in some Matrix? This was odd.
It's interesting that you bring up the sequel happening now, because they tried to make a sequel way back in the early 2000s. And I don't know if you know about the original script for this movie. Do you know what was going to happen?
No. So no idea.
Let me enlighten you. And I think enlighten is the right word.
Okay.
Because they employed Nick Cave, the singer, to write this script where Maximus goes to heaven and he meets the gods, and the gods are like, Maximus, there's this guy who we don't like very much, who we need you to sort out. And his name is Jesus Christ. And so Maximus, in this script, would have been sent from the gods to fight wars throughout time, starting with Jesus and going all the way to the Vietnam War. It would have spanned centuries. I genuinely think that no matter how good Gladiator 2...
That's mad.
I know, right? This film was never going to be that good. In my opinion, that sounds amazing. Sounds balls to the wall, out there, insane, crazy, like nothing we've ever seen before. Kind of like what Joker 2 wanted to be, something that isn't at all for the fans of the original, that takes it in a completely different way. And obviously they would never make that film, but my God, that sounds awesome.
Is the script available?
Yes, apparently it is. Apparently you can read it.
Oh my God. I wish I want to see that now. That is an insane movie. But honestly, this film was kind of exciting. You know, what people have been saying, you know, all the reviews, they've been raving about it. I was like, okay, I'll see what everyone's been talking about. This is pretty interesting. And there was so many people on the first night that came to see this movie. It was just still popular to this day. And it shows like how beloved this movie is. You will go on YouTube and you'll find so many soundtracks. They'll get a lot of views as well. And the ending clip of the movie as well. They'll get like 20 million views.
I'm pretty sure that Hans Zimmer's score is one of the best-selling film soundtracks of all time. And for good reason. It's beautiful. It really is. Now, the way that you're framing this, John, it seems to me like you were very excited for this movie and were a little bit let down.
Yes.
I am exactly the same. The reason why I've told you about this original pitch is because it's bold. It's interesting. It's different.
Yeah.
That doesn't really describe the movie we got. I don't feel like this film did anything different that the first film didn't already give us. It was just exactly what we had in the original, but more. Not to say there weren't some fantastic elements. There were moments when you can see Ridley Scott on his peak. But the thing about Ridley Scott, because he makes so many movies, he'll make like 5 in a year and then just like be releasing numerous films each year. Like already, we had Napoleon last year. We had The Last Duel and House of Gucci, both in the same year as well. He's working on his third Alien movie. Thank God for that. But genuinely, the man makes so many movies and he's not going to stop. He's 86 and he's still going strong.
I need more money. That's what you would say. Like, I need more money.
Yeah.
I need to make sequels.
But the thing is, sometimes he has good films. Sometimes he has bad films. And I felt this was one of those. It's not Ridley Scott on top form, unfortunately. Yeah.
I think he should have not done this movie, but I bet he was like, I got one more in me. I got one more in me to make this movie and I can do it, guys. And by the way, before we go crazy on this movie, it's a very odd pre-production. Apparently, we were going to get a female protagonist in the story.
Yes. It was Mae Calamaway, wasn't it? From Moon Knight.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how you pronounce her name. But I mean, she's amazing. She was a really great part of Moon Knight.
Right? It was announced last year, but then we didn't get any news about that. And I was like, what happened? What happened in that time? And I think that is the reason reason why this movie failed for both of those right here. We just let down by it. Like, what did exactly happen? I could tell the story was changing in so many different directions. It didn't really commit to the stuff that I wish it could have gone to, which we're talking spoilers. The film felt very familiar. That was the thing. It played it too safe. It was trying to be its predecessor. It was trying to do everything what everybody loved about the movie.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an interesting character because she's in it. She's in like one shot, and I did notice her, and I thought to myself, oh, that's her from Moon Knight. Okay. Yeah. And then I found out that she had a bigger role that was cut, and presumably an even bigger role before they started production. Why was she cut? Who knows? Is it because she's an Egyptian-Palestinian actress? The industry and its treatment of Palestinians has been dreadful with Hollywood support of Israel. You know, we don't need to go into all the nitty-gritty about that, but safe to say it's unfair. And there are numerous parts of this film that I feel would have been greatly improved by a deeper look into some of the characters. Maybe that would have been where she comes into it. Who knows? Yeah. But really, it did feel like that kind of slapdash, rushed version of the original. You have everything that you've seen before, but it's not as good. It's not as refined. I saw this movie with my grandparents, and my granddad said he was like, the acting in that was dreadful. And there is an element of just the characters are so similar to what we've seen before. And I didn't even mind the acting that much. But you kind of compare Paul Mescal to Russell Crowe. You compare the two emperors to Joaquin Phoenix. You compare Denzel Washington to Oliver Reed. And I think that the cast is spectacular. It really is. And there are scenes where some of them really come into their own. And they do a great job with what they're given. I do believe the cast were good. But none of the characters were interesting enough or different enough to really elicit anything apart from one. Now, I have to say, Pedro Pascal was far and away, in my opinion, the best character in the movie. Not the character with the most potential, but the character who they really... And I can't get into... We're going to have to wait until spoilers. Yes. But I think that he was the best character in the movie because he did something different. He plays the general of the Roman army and you kind of expect him to be one thing, but he's something different. And that was really interesting because it plays with our expectations. It plays with the tropes. It plays with what the first film has established. And it's brilliant the way that they explore him. But he's not even top three most prevalent characters in the movie. He's not something that the film is interested in exploring. So we kind of feel stuck the whole time with Lucius, who is just like Maximus again. So much of his character echoes what came before, but the meaning of that falls hollow. And so I just wasn't really interested in him as a character.
Yeah, again, it wasn't coherent enough to understand about Lucius as a character because it was just like an echo of Maximus. And the whole of the movie, we get to explore Maximus' leadership qualities. He doesn't give up hope, but he tries to lead the other people. And you get to learn about that when he was in the army. But then in this movie, there wasn't anything like that with the leadership quality because he's like, okay, I guess I'm leader. That was just too quick. There wasn't really any obstacle or anything to say, oh yeah, that is a well-defined character. And I just don't like how, okay, why are we following this character? What the movie was trying to do was trying to get Lucius back to Rome, but there wasn't any impact or anything of change of like passing down this legacy, but also reflecting on his past, like how Maximus has an impact on him and how did he feel like when he came back to Rome? Was it devastating? Is it weird? But no, there wasn't really anything to reflect that. He was just fine. Okay, cool. I'm fighting in Rome. Sure. There wasn't really any change for him to become this leader. It just felt very quick.
Yeah, which is weird because it's a long film, 2 hours, 30 minutes. Like we have theoretically loads of time to flesh out all these elements, but we just don't. And I feel like that's because they want to get to the Colosseum. They want to get to the action that we liked about the first film. And that just feels like a big missed opportunity. Ridley Scott has never really been a franchise guy. The only time that he's ever done anything franchise has been Alien, Prometheus, right? He returned to that decades later after they already had made three sequels and he made a prequel. But it wasn't classic Alien. It was meditative and contemplative and philosophical. It was about God and creation and man, and it was fascinating. And yeah, Alien Covenant was more than the classic Alien story, but what Ridley Scott wanted to tell was a story about these themes, about religion, about creation, about myth, and you know, about AI, about what comes next. fascinating, fascinating stuff. This film doesn't feel like it really wants to say anything different than what the first film gave us. Yeah. It felt like it was more interested in doing the action than it was anything else. And that is a massive, massive shame, because I know that Ridley Scott has interest in these wider concepts. You can see it in Gladiator 2. There is a sequence, maybe about a 20-minute, 30-minute chunk, where we explore Rome's about to fall apart here. People behind the scenes are pulling the strings that are making things collapse, that are making the Roman population angry at the wealthy classes, at the emperors, and are wanting to tear down the whole empire. It's a knock-on effect from what we saw in the first film, and that's brilliant, but the film doesn't feel as interested in that as it does the whole, Lucius, take up your father's sword, put on the father's armor, oh, we're going to do a flashback to the original film. But that's not what's interesting. What's interesting is all the new stuff you're doing, but they don't feel as interested in that, and it's a shame. Like, Lucius starts off and his whole arc is vengeance. He wants vengeance for what's happened to him, which is very similar to what happened to Maximus. Then at a crucial point in the film, he's like, oh no, I now want to lead and I want to prove that Rome can be the best it can be. But you're right, it's such a quick change. We don't get the time for him to sit and be like, do I actually care about Rome? Why should I care about Rome? I feel like I missed all of that. And that's a real shame, because the first film, there isn't a gap in its narrative anywhere. There's no point you can poke and be like, this doesn't work. First film really takes its time, and you would have thought after 20 years, we would have made it. It's a real, real shame.
Going back to the point where we were going to have a completely different protagonist, but that was cut away, and it's like, why can't we just investigate some of the interesting themes as well, like maybe the politics side? But no, again, as you said, Tom, it keeps going into the arena, and should we get into spoilers about the arenas and stuff?
Yeah, let's just go for it. I think safe to say this film was a massive disappointment, and yes, if you like the first film for its spectacle, for its action, you will have a great time for this. But if you want something more, I don't think this is the one for you.
Yeah.
Go watch Transformers 1. That's a better story about the fall of an empire, the fall of an ideology.
Tom, do you remember the amazing fight scenes that we saw in the first Gladiator film? They had good pace. They built up the intensity. There was some really good reversal between the characters, like who's going to win, who's going to lose. But arena sequences that we have in this movie are very odd. From the trailers, you probably would have seen this. The massive Waterworld arena that we have right here, that looks like it's from Disneyland, and it's so out of place. It's strange that they decided to have sharks and then this whole entire like boat sequence that they're going to fight each other. And we have another fight sequence where they were fighting. What was the first one that were fighting?
Baboons?
Baboons, yeah, baboons.
Weird CGI baboons.
I wish they could have made something practical. I mean, well, we can't have animals, like actual animals in it.
You wanted Paul Mescal to be wrestling with a monkey and actually take a bite out of it.
WWE! We can have like The Undertaker coming in. That would have been fine. That would have been fine. He could be in the movie and he'd just be like, okay, here he is.
I would have accepted that. They would have had The Undertaker play Jesus in the original script.
And then you know, like that scene a year ago or something, like he appears out of nowhere. That could be an amazing scene.
But
like
it's
that.
Jesus. He's wearing like a robe. I love it. Yeah. I love it.
But the commentator was God, you know.
Well, I feel like it's interesting because the action all felt like it was trying to one-up the original. And that's all well and good. But the two best action sequences is just when it's two people just fighting. The one with Paul Mescal fighting Pedro Pascal was brilliant. It was tense.
Brilliant.
It felt like there was a lot of weight to every strike. And then the one at the end when Paul Mescal's fighting Denzel Washington, fantastic. It's so visceral and it's so fast. And you feel the danger of it. And also they're in the river as well and they're drowning. It feels so real and so great. I loved all of that. I think that stuff really, really, really works. And from a filmmaking perspective, you know, away from the narrative, the film rarely misses a beat. There are some really upsetting CGI animals, the baboons, the rhino, the sharks. But other than that, it's just like the original. It's beautiful to look at. There's so much practicality. They're building these sets. Everything, the costumes are amazing. The color grading is fantastic. All of it. It just looks brilliant. And that is such a great thing to see. I'm happy that it didn't look like it was all done on sound stages. It felt like a real movie. That was awesome. Unfortunately, there is no Hans Zimmer score. That is a massive shame. But aside from all that, it oozed practicality and it felt like they had traveled through time. And just like, you know, we talked about Beetlejuice a couple of months ago now. And I said, it feels like Tim Burton, he has so much more experience. His 40 years of experience that he's bringing to this film. You kind of feel that for Ridley Scott as well. In this film, he's got 20 more years of experience, and you can really feel that some of the stuff that, dare I say, some of the stuff that doesn't work in the original. I thought this film was edited better in the action. It was cleaner. You could feel the camera was smoother, and it didn't lose that quality of visceralness. I didn't like the monkeys, but it was a very well done action scene, and I loved Paul Mescal taking a big old chunk out of one of them. It was really great, and I just thought that that was where the film shone. I didn't really care about the action within the narrative, but the way that it was shot, the way that it was done was really great, and some wonderful sound design as well. Bloody loud film.
It is a loud film. I gotta say, from that, with the fight sequences, it's pretty solid, but from a narrative perspective, I gotta say, the first thing that intrigued me was the conflict between Pedro Pascal and Paul Mescal. They have this anger between them because they killed each other's, you know... No, wait, didn't Paul Mescal's wife, the character, kill the son? Pedro Pascal's son?
What? Sorry? What movie did you watch? Did you watch the extended
cut? Gladiator 2!
I didn't get that. That didn't happen. I think you dreamt that. I think you missed that.
I fumbled right here.
Never seen someone lose their confidence so much. Just remember when Pedro Pascal's son dies, like, what? Sorry,
no, is it not his brother or something that dies?
I think it's just like another army person.
Really? I thought it was someone,
another soldier.
I blame the movie dialogue then. I misheard some things. I am gonna blame him there, but no. So let's go back to what I was saying about the conflict. So I love the conflict between Pedro Pascal and Paul Mescal, the dynamic, because of the mother that is in love with Pedro Pascal's character, and it's like that was really fresh, and it's like this idea of this person also killed someone that I loved as well. So it's like this whole loop, this cycle of violence that we have. And I thought that was a really good first part of the story that got me hooked, but then it just dissolved and it didn't really have anything to say, because it was focusing on the first part of he lost his wife and he doesn't really reflect that. We just forgot about it and we just go on to somewhere else.
That was one of those things where we're just repeating stuff from the original for the sake of it. In the original, you feel Maximus's love for his home. You never even really get to see his wife and kid, but there's that scene where he talks about the wheat growing and the smell of the flowers and, you know, how beautiful it is to be his home. You know, his son's playing in the garden and, you know, he's with his wife. You feel that just from Russell Crowe's performance. I mean, hey, the man won an Oscar. He won Best Actor for his role as Maximus. In this one, you don't feel the love between Paul Mescal and his wife. And then when she dies, it's just like, yeah, fine, on to the next thing. It was a real shame because you could have given him a different conflict for him to hate Pedro Pascal. But the moment that you see Pedro Pascal watching all the bodies being burned and he says, I claim this city in the honor of Rome, you see the conflict in him immediately. And I went, hold on, this isn't just the classic villain that I thought he was going to be. He is someone different. And then you begin to see the conflict within him and that he doesn't really believe in the Rome that he's fighting for. Pedro Pascal in this film is Maximus. That's brilliant. The idea that Maximus is, from our protagonist, from Lucius's perspective, the villain, the antagonist, is exactly who we were following in the other film. Brilliant. Yeah. So when the two of them are fighting, it's like Batman v Superman. Like, Paul Mescal, he sees blood, he sees rage, and Pedro Pascal's like, mate, listen, we've got... I'm not who you think I am. I've done some terrible things, but really, I hate this just as much as you do. I think it really, really works, that whole conflict. But then they killed him. And so
yeah, they killed him.
All of that great stuff of the best character in the movie.
They could have expanded upon that. They could have.
That's the most interesting part. And I was really, real shame. I acknowledge that we have too many characters. There are two emperors and they're both so much like Commodus, it's ridiculous. Like, what's the point of them? I enjoyed their screen presence, but what was really the point? Derek Jacobi comes back as one of the senators from the original. Why? He's in like two scenes. Like, what? Like, the end of the first film, Connie Nielsen's like, Derek Jacobi, I give Rome to you, senator. And he's like, thank you. And in this film, he's like, I fucking lost it. I lost Rome. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
I gambled it away.
Yeah, and it's like,
Rome back? I need to get, what was the currency like, back in Rome?
I don't know, doubloons?
I need to get 4 doubloons and we get Rome back, everybody.
But it's like, what happened? Like, that's something else to explore. But then you have Denzel, who, you know, was a slave and was a gladiator who clawed his way up and wants to get power, but he's a really interesting character as well, and we don't get to explore him. And there's just so much that's like, it's so interesting, but they just didn't give it enough time. They just really, they fumbled it, man.
I'm just so disappointed, because Denzel is an amazing actor. We got an amazing cast, but him, I was just so disappointed about the character. He had such an interesting backstory, but it just felt very wasted potential. And then the movie decided to go a completely different direction. It was like, okay, we're killing Pedro Pascal's wife. That made a whole sequence about that. That made an entire sequence. And then we look at the twins as well.
Like the monkey. The monkey was fun.
Yeah, the monkey.
The little guy. Yeah.
Yeah, little guy. Just brilliant. Just climbs around on that twin. Yeah. That kind of looks like Ed Sheeran. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get it. I see where it came from.
It's Ed Sheeran. Is he going to sing?
That would have been incredible. The twins like, this is my room now. And he gets out a guitar and he just starts strumming.
Yeah.
Wow.
Singing
But seriously, the film just felt like missed opportunity after missed opportunity. And at the end, there's a really, really great moment, I thought. The final scene where Lucius is like, speak to me, father. And he finally kind of opens up this idea of Maximus and feeling him. And then we transition into the song from the first film and it really works. But I feel like it only works because of the first film. Like, Gladiator 2 doesn't earn those emotions. Gladiator 1 earned those emotions. And so it's just a real, real shame. I had hopes for this film, but I guess that's life.
Yeah.
So Gladiator 2, what are you going to give it out of 10?
5.
Yeah, I agree. 5. Bit of a shame, but we move on.
Please do watch the first film, though, if you decided to listen to this.
Classic Gladiator film.
But I gotta say, you know, you get to see the title screen.
Yeah.
It comes to 2.
Yeah.
Gladiator 2. Yeah.
I genuinely was like, oh yeah, here we go. We're back. This year, there have been quite a couple films. This happened with Kung Fu Panda 4 as well. The title drops, and I went, yes, this is going to be amazing. And then by the end of the film, I'm just like, what did we do?
Oh, my God.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed it, you can like and subscribe. If you want to see more, and if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us higher stars if you think we're worthy. And next week, now I do have higher hopes for this one. It is Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim.
Yeah.
Who would have thought we'd be getting another Lord of the Rings film? Let alone an anime about Helm's Deep. This looks great. I don't know if you've seen the trailer on the big screen, but wow, I'm very excited.
The trailer. It's beautiful to watch on the big screen.
And yeah, and you can send us an email at alstonefilmpod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on War of the Rohirrim. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on that film by then. And we'll answer it right here in the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram @alstonefilmpod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Aswell, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see editor clips, which are also and Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts, and you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to Al James Smith at excellent theme and Roland Phillips for vocals as always, and I think that's everything. Take away, given
back.
Goodbye.